This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. And we begin our discussion today with what happened last night. Heavy rainfall moved across southern Louisiana, and Francine was quickly downgraded to a tropical depression this morning after making landfall as a Category 2 storm. The storm came ashore in Terrebonne Parish, 30 miles south-southwest of Morgan City, with maximum sustained winds of about 100 miles per hour. Meteorologists said that heavy rain is now moving across Mississippi, going through Alabama, the Florida Panhandle, Tennessee, Georgia, eastern Arkansas. But Louisiana appears to have dodged the proverbial bullet, albeit about 400,000 people are without power as a result of the wrath of Hurricane Francine. But as I mentioned yesterday, this one, as Category 2 storms go, was not as prolific as, say, Gustav, which was also a Category 2. And as we know, Gustav rammed through Baton Rouge, caused massive damage, perhaps the most devastating hurricane to ever hit Baton Rouge, and it was a Category 2. This one, if you live in Baton Rouge, as I do, it was kind of a nothing burger. It was not as strong as some feared, and that is good news. And it also largely spared the greater New Orleans area. And before we get to Mark Ballard, who's back from Rome, as in Rome, Italy, we're with Troy Carter, the congressman who represents not only New Orleans but North Baton Rouge. And good morning to you, Congressman.
Good morning, Jim. How are you today?
Doing well. Well, I know you have been following this storm the last 48 hours or so. What's your take on how we did?
Well, some areas not as well as others. Fortunately, not as bad as it could have been. As of this date, no fatalities, thank God. Lots of standing water, roughly 250,000 people without power. And we know how devastating that can be. The president has signed the declaration of emergency, which will free up federal dollars getting into local and state leaders to make sure that resources are applied immediately to start to get people's lives back together. The assessment process begins now. Dena Griswold, the administrator of FEMA, will be on the ground and on the helicopter shortly to fly over the affected areas to get an aerial view to start the assessment process of figuring out where to apply resources. This is a critical part of the process of getting money into the hands of parish leaders.
But it could have been much worse, and we've had much worse. That said, I know the last thing you want people to do is to say, look, they were saying this is going to be a killer hurricane, and it, as you said, so far no fatalities. We never know until it happens, do we?
We never know, and we should always treat every threat as a real threat. We should never let our guards down. We're blessed when we don't have fatalities, but we still have a great deal of loss for people who, in fact, were hit. It certainly could always be worse, but it could also be better. One thing that I'm proud to say, what made it better than it could have been, is the investment that the federal government has made into shoring up our levees and our flood systems to make sure that we're applying resources to get into communities to make sure our levees are not toppled over. And thank God our levees did their jobs. We've got to now make sure that we continue to learn from every storm that comes, that we build more resiliently, that we fortify neighborhoods that they can withstand the rain, that we invest in our pumping systems so they can do their jobs. And now I'm told there's some 7,500 bucket trucks and linemen who are dispatched throughout the state working to get power on immediately, as soon as humanly possible, I should say. We hope it would be immediately. We know these things take time, but kudos to the energy companies for getting people out. We implore them to double down their efforts and make sure that We get power back on. You know that in Southeast Louisiana, it gets pretty darn hot when the power's out.
And we know
that if history is any indicator, we've lost as many people, have had as many people challenged due to heat-related injuries as we do the storm itself.
And because of the numbers we're talking about in the hundreds of thousands, it could be a week for some people, and a week in mid-September is not comfortable at all. So we shall see. And I know you are going to follow this, and there are literally thousands of people who are involved in restoring power all over South Louisiana. And thank goodness we have dodged the proverbial bullet. But we are also in a season that continues with hurricanes. And usually if we make it to September 12th, we're in the clear, although some remember Rita, which came later than that. Occasionally we get one in the latter part of September that is cataclysmic, and we can't let our guard down, can we?
We cannot. We have to remain vigilant. We have to take every threat as a very serious one. I implore people to please pay attention to your federal, local, and state weather alerts. Follow the directive strictly. When you are given the directive to evacuate, please, please do it quickly. Gather your pets, your elderly, your credit card, your information, your insurance documents, and follow the prescribed routes to get to a safe and higher ground. We should never, ever roll the dice with these storms, because we simply just don't know what they may do.
Congressman Troy Carter, and I've gotten two different emails from in different parts of the state from people asking the only Democrat currently in our delegation what you thought of the debate the other night between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump.
I thought Vice President Kamala Harris offered significant hope for all people, recognizing that regardless of Republican or Democrat, we are Americans, and we deserve to have a leader that that will give us hope and not fear, that will espouse the hopes and dreams of America and respect our democracy and respect our rule of law. The former president, quite frankly, frightened us all when he suggested that if he's elected this time, we will never have to vote again. Listen, regardless of who may be the president, the American people should always maintain the right to fire you in 4 years if you don't do what you said you would do. The notion that we might somehow do away with our democracy and find ourselves in a dictatorship is something that Democrats, Republicans, independents, and others should be fearful of.
Well, the former president says he won the debate.
Winning is in the eye of the beholder, I suspect. but if conventional wisdom is correct, there's some 71 million people, I think they may think differently.
Yeah, I think most people who saw it, even those who were supportive of him, thought he did as poorly as Joe Biden did in June. And
I think you have to sometimes be willing to step back and accept that. Joe Biden accepted that he lost and he did extremely poorly. I think former President Trump has to accept that same fate, that he did poorly and the Vice President Harris did much better. And that's just a reality. That's not subject to just pure opinion. There are batteries and facts that can be checked to determine that. I think that it was noted by the fact checkers that there was some 33 untruthful statements. I'll be nice. Untruthful statements that were told by the former president compared to one untruthful statement by the vice president. That's a stark comparison. Mm-hmm. Of course, we'd rather there be no untruths told in these debates, but sometimes hyperbole gets in the way.
We've got three callers, but let's take Jim on I-12, and we'll let Congressman Carter get on his way. He, of course, is tending to his flock today. But, Jim, please be brief. You're on the air with Congressman Carter.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Congressman. Thank you for...
Good morning, Jim. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. We fared well with the hurricane out in Livingston Parish, thankfully. So I have my own internal polling. I think it's similar to what Donald Trump does in that I'm 60. My body, my mind still thinks I'm 18. And I try to do things that my body says, uh-uh. And yet my internal polling says, hey, I'm really still young.
All right. Well, now the age issue is with Trump, not Biden. And he appeared to have had better nights than he did the other night. Congressman Carter, you want to bite on that one?
Yeah, listen, you know, there comes a time when you have to kind of catch up. And ironically, when you look at the criticism that was leveled against President Biden, I don't hear the same level of criticism with
Donald Trump. Thank you, sir. Let's keep talking, and we'll be back with Mark Ballard after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, Robin Dow producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Through the years, the last several, Mark Ballard has been with us every week, and he's missed the last few weeks because he was traveling abroad. He's back in Washington, D.C., where he now covers politics in the Beltway and beyond, but if you'd like to get in with him, he's at the ready, and we've had several listeners ask about him, like, where's Mark? Well, he was in Rome, Italy, and Mark, I'm sure you had a trip for the ages, and once again, our number is 877-217-5757. How was it?
Very hot.
Really?
I have to say it was, it was in the upper 90s every day, totally sunny. I think I got a little sunburned, you know, and fairly crowded, but I was told by the Romans that it was not as crowded as it had been earlier in the summertime. Apparently that folks sending their kids back to school dropped the numbers, but it was a great trip. I always enjoy going to Italy, going to Europe. Taking time off. So.
Well, here is a story from Washington, where Mike Johnson is perched alongside Mark Ballard. The speaker from Benton, Louisiana, had a plan to avert a government shutdown and has run into a wall of Republican opposition. Lawmakers from an array of factions in his party are balking at the six-month stopgap funding measure that Democrats have also rejected. Johnson says he plans to bring up a spending bill this week that would extend federal funding through March 28th, which includes a measure that would require proof of U.S. citizenship to register to vote. The addition of the voting restriction bill was a nod to the right flank of his conference in an effort to force politically vulnerable Democrats to take this vote. But his $1.6 trillion proposal was almost immediately met with an outpouring of skepticism, reports the New York Times, by House Republicans as they return to Washington after a lengthy summer recess. What's going on, Mark?
Well, what's going on is that the that former President Donald Trump wants to include this sort of message that you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of undocumented immigrants are voting in American elections, which, of course, is like, well, first off, is against the law, and they can't do that. And they have not actually found actual evidence of widespread voters, undocumented immigrant voters on any registration lists. Texas went through a whole bunch of them, and they found a couple of thousand of who they said were illegal immigrants and who turned out to be documented immigrants who got their voter registration card shortly on the day, within minutes after taking their citizenship oath, and basically kind of threw them off the registration rolls. And a lot of the Democrats and a good number of Republicans, because Johnson withdrew, he withdrew that. They didn't have a vote on it, and they probably won't have a vote on it this week. His measure, which was sponsored by Clay Higgins, by the way, and they withdrew that measure because he could not get enough Republicans to agree to it. Mm-hmm. A lot of more moderate Republicans have said, you know, no, this is stupid. We're not going to do this. We're not going to tie up appropriations bills over this issue. The thing that we need to remember is that yesterday Johnson says that he doesn't really have a plan B, and he's going to continue to get Scalise to whip the votes on this and see if they can come up with something. But they need to do so before the end of the month. And I mean, at September 30th, which is, 18 days away? And otherwise, the government shuts down. And so it's going to be dramatic and entertaining over the next 18 days.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Now, this immigration issue is an issue until it's not, and Hal in Monroe sends me this, and I've read similar reports. More than 14,000 Ukrainian nationals have been resettled in the United States, most since the war in Ukraine began with Vladimir Putin and Russia attacking Ukraine without provocation. But these are 14,000 people who just came here and were let in, no questions asked. Because they're at war. Now, there's also a war in Haiti. There's a war in Sudan. I suspect it would be much different for people in those countries. This is largely done through the Lautenberg program. That's named after the former U.S. Senator Frank Lautenberg. It allows members of certain religious minority groups from countries of the former Soviet Union to reunite with family members in the U.S. Now, it is curious that we let people who are white in this country as immigrants unabated, and yet if you're dark-skinned or Hispanic, you're suddenly you're suspect. You're eating cats and dogs. What do you think of this, Mark?
Well, that particular law was passed back in the 80s, and it was to allow
It was passed in 2018, actually. But yeah, the initial one you're talking about. Please continue. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
Thanks for the update on it. But initially, it was passed in the 80s, and it was to ease Russian Jews into the country who were being oppressed by the Soviet government. You know, you do make a point that and the Ukrainians were part of the Soviet Union at the time. But you do make the point that that it does seem like white Europeans have an easier go of it than blacks and Latinos do.
877-217-5757 is your number. Jason in Jones Creek, you're on with Mark Ballard. Jason, good morning.
Hey, Mark. Hey, Jim. Yeah, look, based on President Trump's statement the other night at the debate, and previous to the debate, about how he could quickly end the war in Ukraine, which we know he would just basically concede. That's what I believe. But, what are the chances he's already actively, talking with Vladimir Putin, discussing the plans for withdrawal, maybe even setting his next impeachment or hearings on what would happen in the repercussions of this? Thank you.
All right.
I just don't know if he's talking to.
I doubt that he is, and I don't think he has to. I think being Putin.
Well, there has been a history. Remember that Reagan was talking when he was running, was talking to the Iranians about the hostages.
And Nixon, of course, was
Nixon was talking to the North Vietnamese about the Vietnamese. So if you told me that Trump was doing the same with Vladimir Putin, I wouldn't be surprised. But I kind of, like you, Jim, I don't think that's really happening.
And among many many statements the other night, the former president said that Putin was for Kamala Harris. I have my doubts. But
he said a lot of things. He said
a lot of things. And Troy Carter said that he was fact-checked more than 30 times, and she was fact-checked once. One of those things that should have been fact-checked regarding her, she said 81 million people fired Donald Trump in 2020. The actual number was 81,283,501, so Kamala was off a little bit.
That sounds a little nitpicky, don't you think? She got the basic number right.
Dan downtown, 81,283,501. Dan downtown, good morning. You're on with Mark.
Good morning. Listen, on your recent Italian sojourn, did you come across any of our U.S. Supreme Court justices on their four-month vacations?
I did not, and nor did I run across Mike Johnson, who was also in Italy at the same time. So, I was mostly around German and American tourists. I'm an American tourist, but that was mostly around German and American tourists.
I bet the food was good.
The food was great. The food was great, and considerably less expensive than in the U.S. We went to a Michelin-rated restaurant and walked out of there with a $123 bill, and that's usually per person in the U.S.
Yeah, you're right about that. 877-217-5757. Back with more after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard is back with us after a few weeks abroad, and we're glad to have this man of wisdom and erudition in the house. 877-217-5757. James in Lafayette. James, you're on with Mark. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mark and Jim. My question has to do with the bipartisan border bill that would have added 15,000 guards to the border that was torpedoed by Trump making some phone calls because he didn't want the Biden administration to have a victory. Now, in the debate, Trump talked about immigration numerous times, but only one time was it brought up that he torpedoed that bill, and the moderators didn't press him on it at all. Why do you think that is?
Well, there was a lot to press, and he didn't answer a few questions, but they did. I thought they did a reasonable job, and they allowed him to talk much more than Kamala Harris. But on that one, he didn't really give an answer. He didn't give an answer on whether he would veto a bill to ban all abortions in the U.S. There were several bills, questions in which he was evasive, Mark.
This is true. Also, whether or not he would accept the results of the election. But that was something that I noticed, as the caller mentioned, that he did not answer the question. And I was hoping they would press him more on it, but there was so much happening at the time, it was hard to. And he would go off on all these tangents, which would set off the vice president. And so, I mean, I understand why they missed it, but I mean, I think that he would have been much better to just answer that question, because that bill was written by a very conservative Oklahoma senator who was, it was written bipartisan, but I mean, it was a charge of the bipartisan mm-hmm. nature of the bill. And it was about as much as they were going to get. But I think that the former President Trump needed and wants, and we have seen through his campaign, to focus on the border problem in Texas.
And when it came to the Affordable Care Act, and when he was asked what he would do, since he's against it, he says, "I have concepts. You would think after 10 years of slamming it, actually 14 years, he's been slamming it since it went into effect in 2010, he would have more than concepts, Mark.
I would think so, too. But to be fair, the vice president also was kind of light on specifics. In all across the board, the only specifics we heard is that there was going to be a tariff on imported goods. And, that mm-hmm. seemed to be, that seemed to be the only thing, and even that was not really brought in, specifically, how's that going to impact consumers in America? That was not really dealt with either.
Not only do tariffs affect consumers, but countries who have tariffs imposed against them often react accordingly. And tariffs against U.S. goods, that's not a good thing for the country's economy either. But Trump has proudly said, I think he said it in the debate the other night, I'm the tariff man. So he wants to embrace this, and he says it was his panacea for all kinds of, says he can even balance the budget with tariffs. And okay. Randy and Zachary. Randy, you're on with Mark Ballard. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mark. Mark, I have a question that I'm really concerned about. Laura Loomer, the so-called conservative influencer, who stated that 9/11 was an inside job, and Marjorie Taylor Greene rebuked her yesterday for saying that the White House would smell like curry if Kamala Harris was elected. My question to you is it possible that President Trump is listening to people like that who are causing him to spout out these conspiracy theories? Because it's really concerning to me, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, I think I would answer that by saying that that former President Trump basically reacts to what he is told. He is basically articulating the fears and frustrations of essentially half of the country. And so I'm not altogether sure that he actually has a real political agenda other than to speak to those voters. That's what I think.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org if you'd like to get in with Mark Ballard. Leonard Joseph writes, immigration builds economies and lowers inflation. Well, you know, in Louisiana, for example, we lament the fact that we are not growing as a state as far as people. In fact, for the first time, we're actually losing the net population. So immigration, it goes without saying, over time, Mark, is usually a good thing. After all, we are a country of immigrants.
Well, I mean, that has been the case, since the very beginning. Even before we became a country, it was the case in New York City when the English ran New York City, when the Dutch ran New York City, and it's been that way since. And America has always been able to attract immigrants who, you know, come and create their own part of the economy. Sometimes actually stealing people and bringing them over to force them to be part of the economy. But that's been the history of the country, as that we are a country of immigrants. Both you and I, our ancestors did not. They came from elsewhere.
That is correct.
I think that's what we remain.
Yep. Well, through the years, and the listener has correctly noted that Trump got more time at the debate the other night than I've given him more time, as I guess every talk host in the country has, because he is a guy who speaks in sound bites, and many of them are objectionable to our listeners, but he is a guy who knows how to get attention. And now the shoe is on the other foot, and Jimmy Kimmel, Robin Dow, has chosen this. I listened to it. It's PG rated, so if you don't like it, tune away for a few minutes. But here's Jimmy Kimmel on Donald Trump's debate performance.
Liberal. I had a liberal elite day today. I woke up, I ate a big cat for breakfast, and then I had a baby, then I had an abortion right after that. Then I went to pick up my kids from their mandatory transgender surgery operations after school, and now I'm back here spreading Marxist propaganda on TV. That's how we do it. We are, I can feel we are still buzzing after the Lincoln dumbass debate last night. It couldn't have gone much better than it did for Kamala Harris. She baited him masterfully. I don't think I've ever seen masturbating like that on television. Trump was either, he was either blowing a stack or staring straight ahead, squinting with a sad, mad face that he had the same look on his face that he has when McDonald's won't make him a McGriddle after 10:30 a.m. More than 67 million Americans watched the debate on television last night, and of that, $67 million. The only one who seems to think Trump did a good job is Donald Trump.
I think it was the best debate I've ever personally that I've had.
This was my best debate.
This was my best debate. I thought it was very good.
I think we did great.
It was a great debate.
We had a, I thought we had a great debate last time.
But I thought I did a great job.
This is what he does. He gets clobbered. He gets absolutely annihilated, and then he just pretends he won. Even Fox News said he lost the debate bigly. I mean, so much so that after the debate, Hannity tried to talk him into a do-over.
She wants a second debate. What's
your answer? She lost. She wants it because she lost.
Do you have an answer?
Well, I don't know. I have to think about it, but if you won the debate, I sort of think maybe I shouldn't do it. Why should I do another debate? She immediately said, we want another debate. That's, you know what happens when you're a prize fighter and you lose? You immediately want a new fight.
You want a rematch.
You want a rematch. The guy that won is sort of happy and thinking about it.
Yeah, well, the guy that won isn't a guy. The guy that won is a woman. A woman who handed you your big orange ass so brutally, you're scared to face her again.
So no answer on their offer for a second debate.
Again, the reason you do a second debate is if you lose, and they lost. And yeah, we looked at one poll, it was 92-7.
Yeah.
We looked at another one, 86-3.
Yeah. Wow. Where'd you see that poll, 86-3? Can you imagine if we had an athlete like this? Like if the quarterback of the Carolina Panthers, if Bryce Young, after they got crushed by the Saints last week at the postgame press conference, said, it was a great game, I was great, felt really good to get a win on the road. And the reporter's like, well, you got crushed. And he said, well, we didn't get crushed. We won. And the reporter's like, what do you mean you won? You lost 47-10. No, we didn't. We won 86-3. We won by a lot. I mean, honestly, we wouldn't know what to do. We wouldn't be able to process it. We'd probably have to throw him out of the country. He'd definitely get put into concussion protocol immediately, but Donald Trump just walks around making stuff up.
A very important debate. Now, she wants to do another one because she got beaten tonight, but I don't know.
Why wouldn't you look at her?
The polls are indicating that we got 90%, 60%, 72%, 71%, and 89%.
Where are you getting these numbers from?
There we go. That was Donald Trump. As usual, never conceding defeat. Never, never, never. And if he somehow loses this race, which is going to be close, Mark Ballard, I suspect he will not concede again.
I think that's really likely. I think that a lot of what's being set up now is to set up some sort of a legal challenge to the results.
Well, we do have to roll, but Mark, we'll be calling on you next week. Thanks for your comeback, and we're back with Laura Hinton. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and we turn the page, and we'll talk some sports, LSU sports. The Tigers of Brian Kelly are 1-1 and 6-point favorites over South Carolina Saturday in Columbia. SEC opener and an extremely important game for LSU. And a gentleman is in the house who has a great history with LSU. He signed with the Tigers out of Chesapeake, Virginia in 1971, and he wasn't just any recruit. Laura Hinton was the first black player to sign with LSU. And to put it in perspective, if you go up the Mississippi, Frank Broyles integrated the Arkansas program 2 years before LSU. He also had been coach at Missouri, and he integrated that program in 1956, 15 years before LSU. And then you go one state up, University of Iowa integrated its football team in the year of 1896. So something was going on in the South, and Laura Hinton was a pioneer, and he deserves credit for withstanding, I'm sure, some challenges as he experienced at LSU, and he came all the way from Virginia to do it. Good morning to you, sir. It's good to visit with you again. It's been a few years.
Good morning to you. It's great to be with you this morning.
What prompted you to sign with LSU in the year of 1971?
I had seen LSU in the Orange Bowl against Nebraska my senior year, and LSU's had seen them also against Ole Miss, several other nationally televised games, and just looked like they reminded me a lot of my high school team. They LSU, you know, we didn't have a lot of size, but we were quick and played mm-hmm. good defense. And
who recruited you?
Well, I guess we'd have to say that was Governor McKithen.
Really? John McKithen.
John McKithen.
Did he come to Virginia?
He did not. Some people from Louisiana had seen some football films of me playing in high school and felt like I could play at this level. And they alerted some folks, and Governor McKithen made a call and wanted to see if I was interested mm-hmm. in coming down to visit the school.
And you came down. Did he visit you when you made your visit to LSU?
I did. Actually had a visit to the governor's mansion and had breakfast with the governor, and it was a real neat experience for mm-hmm. a high school person.
Well, Laura was a big star, and he was what they would call a five-star, but he got hurt. He still played at LSU for 3 years and averaged 4.2 yards a carry, which is, in those days was pretty good. But the injury kept you from the stardom that many predicted, and that had to be a downer.
It was, but I have to really, my teammates kept my spirits up, and the coaches also. They mm-hmm. my claim to fame was actually playing the opposition running back the week of practice, and so you know, we were playing Alabama. I was Johnny Musso. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So that kept me involved with the program, and I was making some contributions, helping to get these guys ready to play on Saturday night. And I knew that my as far as stardom and all that, you know, that my high school days were, you know, the more prominent as far as what I did on the field.
We're visiting with Laura Hinton, the first black football player to sign with LSU. Mike Williams was the first to play, but Laura signed first. He was born 9/29/53, so in a few days he'll be 71 years old. And it was in 1971, when he was only 18 years old, that he made this choice. And you had to know the implications, being the first in a predominantly white university. I think there were only about 100 black students at LSU at the time, weren't there?
If that many. But on my visit to LSU, the guys that I went around with, they were freshmen on the team, Warren Capone, Tyler LaFosse, and several other guys took me around. And, you know, that experience mm-hmm. with them on Saturday night, it was in the spring. But that experience made me know that, you know, things were going to be all right. I'd be accepted on the team, and these guys really made me feel welcome. And I just felt like, man, this is where I need to go. This is where I need to sign.
All right. David Helowin says you were a legend at Exxon, that you were part of the Highland Road scene back in the day when they had those bars up and down Highland Road. For the brass rail and the iron horse and the bingle and the keg. Did you actually frequent those night spots?
Well, you know, one thing about me was I got along with everybody. And, you know, the LSU was a small school back then, if you can say.
By comparison.
Yeah, by comparison. I think we had like 18,000 students.
18-year-old drinking age then, too.
Yeah, and that was different for me coming from Virginia, because you know, we couldn't frequent places like that until you were 21.
But I know you faced discrimination, and last time some people called me and said Laura's just being a nice guy, and I'm sure the players were charitable, but at least most of them, but some of the others, I suspect you had some challenges, didn't you?
I made it my business to stay close to campus. I guess you'd say it was a lot more friendly.
Yeah, remember the North Boulevard riot there.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff going on. Yeah. As a matter of fact, when I went home for Christmas holidays, mm-hmm. That's when they had that unfortunate situation at Southern University where
the kids were killed.
Students got shot, and my parents were like, I said, that's way on the other side of town, so I don't have to worry about that.
Well, was there any commingling of athletes from Southern and LSU?
No.
None?
No, not at that point in time, no.
Well, Kylus Temple, who came along a little before you, but he played basketball a year before, I guess. He stated on this show that at a place that's still open, he was told they didn't serve the N-word, and he says that's okay. I don't eat them, using the line from Muhammad Ali and Dick Gregory. But I suspect you ran into some of that, didn't you?
Well, as a matter of fact, on my visit to LSU, one of the places we went to on down on Highland Road, similar incident. I was told that I couldn't come in, and the guys on the team, they weren't having it, and they were about to take the place apart. And I expressed to them that, you know, we didn't need to go here. We can go to Pizza Hut or somewhere else and just have a great time. And at that moment, that was the moment that I realized that I didn't have to make another trip to any other school, that these were the guys I wanted to be with.
Mm-hmm. A listener asked, you played with Arthur Cantrell. There's a guy who liked to fight, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to know Arthur. He was a very physical guy, but we got along well. He, as a matter of fact, I wore his number.
24?
Number 24, and he suggested in a strong way that I get his number. He wanted me to follow up. You know, those were big shoes to fill, but I felt honored.
He was a good player.
He was a good player.
Yeah. But you decided to stay. You've been in Baton Rouge for a long time, haven't you?
Been here ever since, August of 1971.
What made you stay?
Well, the weather, for one thing. I spent a lot of time shoveling snow.
The weather?
And
Didn't
miss those days.
So you traded the snow for hurricanes and lots of hot weather. But Baton Rouge is a richer place because you stayed, and it is amazing how many people who come to LSU, myself included, from other parts of the country, they end up staying in Baton Rouge.
Well, thank you for that compliment. And it's people have actually treated me well here. I got along with people in the community and after LSU days, and just continues.
Another listener says, are you regretful you missed out on the NIL sweepstakes?
Well, put it this way. We got $15 a month. They call it laundry fee, $7.50 every 2 weeks. And, you just can't look back on. I'm glad for the guys today.
$15 a month.
$15
And you were one of the highest recruited players in the country.
Yeah. That's the way it was back then.
But you were the first to sign, and you knew the significance of that, didn't you?
I did, but I realize more now as a grown-up. Back then, it was just another step in the saga of trying to make it to the next level. And, back in those days, there were not a whole lot of opportunities, and sports was just one way that a lot of black athletes especially looked to.
Are you treated well by LSU now?
Absolutely. They don't give out Hall of Fame rings to just
That's
anybody.
Right. You are a member of the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame, which means you got a degree.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pete Maravich isn't in. I don't think he's coming back to get his degree either.
Oh,
Albert
wow.
Bell has a degree, and they won't let him in.
Oh, wow.
But they let Laura Hinton in, as they should have, and congratulations.
Well, thank you again.
And thanks for visiting with us. Let's do this more often. Laura Hinton, one of the greats from LSU, first black player to sign with the Tigers. Back tomorrow. Stay safe. Stay tuned.